Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who are not necessarily politics experts. I'm Julia Bell, and I'm the kind of person who thinks it's a good idea to record a podcast on fucking bonfire night. I don't know why or at what point I thought this would be a smart idea, but I've already stressed and I've been recording for 28 seconds. But essentially, I'm apologising in advance. If you can hear a very dull but completely unrelenting banging in the background, it's because it's fireworks and it's people having a lovely time. I'm not in a war zone, I assure you. But yeah, have I introduced myself? I don't know. I'm Julia Bell, and today I'm going to be walking you through this really explosive story around Owen Paterson, the MP, who was found to have been breaking rules on lobbying. I will explain what all of that means. Please don't worry. If you're someone who's listening to this going, God, I don't even know what lobbying is, I promise I've got your back. I was going to do an episode on the developments from COP26. Obviously, that's the last episode I did, was talking about that event, and I wanted to kind of give you an update. But my God, this Owen Paterson scandal's really just snowballed, and it's even resulted in him resigning from his role as MP. Just as a trigger warning, actually, before I get going, in this episode, heartbreakingly, there will be mention of suicide, and that's in relation to a member of Owen Paterson's family. I thought about just focusing on the politics, but to be honest, this particular event in his personal life, I think it is quite an essential part to you understanding the full breadth of the situation. And I thought it was unfair for me to not at least mention it. So I will be touching on that later on. Of course, bear that in mind if it affects your desire to carry on listening to this episode. So just talking about the situation in general then, it started off as a pretty simple story, which we've seen a fair few times before, where an MP, in this case, the Conservative MP for North Shropshire, Owen Paterson, was found to have broken the rules on lobbying. Looking at that, yes, it's, you know, kind of a scandal. I thought that was kind of a big deal in many ways, in that, you know, naughty, an elected public official should not be pushing the interests of private companies for whom they are on the payroll, right? It's a scandalous state of affairs. But to be honest, that wasn't the most fascinating story I'd ever seen, because it sadly does happen quite a lot where you get people in high offices, in elected offices, who are found to be pushing the boundaries between their own interests and the interests of their role, their elected role. But the thing that made this story stand out, and this story kind of exceptional, is actually how Boris Johnson and the government have handled it. So the government are getting a lot of flack, particularly from Labour and from the opposition parties like the SNP and the Liberal Democrats. But actually, to be honest, even a few Conservative MPs are pissed off as well, because what they've tried to do is essentially completely change the rules. So they were saying, well, that process that Owen Paterson is being kind of punished through because of what he's been seen to do in breaking these rules, do you know what? It's outdated. We don't like the process anymore. So let's completely change it. And oh, what do you know? If we change the process, it does conveniently also mean that Owen Paterson will be off the hook. Now, the government doing that was really quite something. I was going to say I've never seen anything like it. I have seen something like it, because Boris Johnson does like to blur the lines when it comes to parliamentary customs. But I'm trying to think of an equivalent, like how kind of unheard of this. Do you know what it's like? It's like if when you're at school, if you ever had a kid in your year whose parent was a teacher at the school, I had like quite a few kids in my year whose parents were teachers. Imagine that you're sitting in class and the teacher's kid is like quite severely found to have broken the rules. But now imagine that the teacher, so that kid's parent, instead of allowing the process to, you know, go through the motions and the kid be punished, that teacher turn around and say, actually, I don't like these rules. Now that my kid's been caught breaking them, I think that they need to be overhauled. And, you know, let's just update them. And if that should mean that while we update them, my kid be let off the hook, then fine. Like, that's the scenario, pretty much. I mean, it's a pretty reductive description of what's happened. But, like, if you were another kid in that class, you wouldn't be over the moon, I don't suspect. And so that's kind of how, like, the Labour and Liberal Democrat MPs are feeling, because they're like, hang on, if it was one of us that was found to be breaking the rules, would you be so desperate to overhaul them and completely change them coincidentally in the same week? I don't think so. Anyway, I think that is the most fascinating part of this story, but I will, of course, explain all of it to you, what Owen Paterson did and why it was seen to be wrong by particular people, and then how the government sort of attempted to change the rules, and then where we're at now. Please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast or you've clicked follow if you're listening on Spotify, and let's get you cleared up on all of it. Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. Who is Owen Paterson? Well, of course, until he stood down this week from his post, he was the MP for North Shropshire. But he wasn't, and of course he was a Conservative, but he wasn't just any old MP. He was quite a big deal, I guess, because he'd been in that position for over 2 decades, I believe. Let me just double check. Yeah, he got North Shropshire in 1997. And he stayed there until his resignation on the 5th of November, 2021. Wow. Okay, so yeah, big deal insofar as A, he'd been in the post for ages, but B, he used to be in the cabinet in David Cameron's era. So he was Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, so basically the Environmental Secretary. And then he was the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. So he's been in government. He's been in a very powerful position, or multiple. So that means he's got friends and contacts and networks all over the place, in and out of Westminster, and therefore a much bigger voice than your average backbencher MP. He's kind of part of the furniture, if you like, of the Conservative Party. Everybody knows who he is. He's been there for a long time. Now, alongside his role as an MP, Paterson also did some consulting work for other private companies. Now, it kind of makes your alarm bell go off a little bit. Like, what? An MP was doing consulting for private companies at the same time? Is that allowed? Yes, it is. So there's nothing really in the law to stop an MP earning money doing other things. Some MPs might practice medicine. You know, if they're a trained doctor, they might think, right, well, we need doctors right now. I'll carry on practicing. Others might practice law, whatever it is. But in Paterson's case in particular, he has been on the payroll for these two companies, Randox Laboratories, and the second one is called Lynn's Country Foods. Now, just to give you an idea, Randox is a big healthcare and diagnostics company, and they've actually produced a lot of like the kit involved with COVID, so things like test kits. And then Lynn's Country Foods makes meat products like sausages and venison and stuff like that. And payment-wise for this consulting work that Paterson was doing, just so you know some figures, because they're quite enviable, he was reportedly getting £8,333 a month from Randox, and that was for 16 hours work. That's like £500 an hour. Quick maths. My maths gets so much better when it's talking about really high sums of money. And then on top of that, he was getting £2,000 a month from Lynn's Country Foods. £2,000 a month from Lynn's Country, again, for consulting. Now, like I've been saying ad nauseum, it doesn't matter about how much money you get. It doesn't matter for how many hours. He's fine to get that. And I know that consultants do get great money. They're literally paid for their wisdom, right? And they're paid for their experience. But just the fact that he was getting so much did provide, kind of unfortunately for him, ample material for Paterson's critics to say, well, I wonder what his motivation was. Was it to help the people that are paying him like 100k a year more collectively? Or is it to help us commoners? You know, it didn't help that narrative for him, let's just say that. Anyway, all of this stuff that he did was declared publicly. So the fact that he was on their payroll, it wasn't a hidden thing. It wasn't that he was part of the government anymore. He was just an MP. So it was all good in that respect. You can do that side hustle as long as the two roles don't end up merging. Because where it gets tricky is if the likes of the Standards Committee and the Independent Commissioner for Parliamentary Standards, i.e. this person who polices everyone's conduct, if they start to think that you're pushing the interests of these private companies disproportionately, so you're bringing them up a lot in Parliament or you're going to meetings and representing their interests, then you're starting to use your influence to push a private agenda. And that is not a democratic thing to do. It would be like, right, imagine if I was an MP as in Julia Bell, the MP, some constituency somewhere in the UK has completely lost their minds and voted me in to represent them in Parliament, right? And I, Julia Bell MP, decide to keep this podcast going on the side. So I don't want to give up on you guys. I want to carry on the Bare Naked Politics podcast. Now, in this scenario, because of my heightened profile, imagine like a big sponsor comes along and says, we actually want to pay you, whatever it is, £10,000 per month. And with that money, all you have to do in return is promote our products on your podcast. That would be absolutely fine because it's nothing to do with my role as an MP. It's my role as a podcaster, and the two things are completely separate, right? But it would start getting dodgy if I were to use my position as an MP to further the interests of that brand. So say it's like a lipstick company, right? And they've got this big factory in the UK that makes the lipsticks. If I was organising meetings as an MP with like my contacts in politics, for example, if I organise a meeting with the health secretary, Sajid Javid, and I was saying, listen, Sajid, listen, Sarge, this lipstick company are brilliant. And if you ever need COVID testing kits, for example, you should use these guys because they've got this big factory. I know them. They're really good. And to be honest, it would help me if they made more money because then I might get more money for my podcast. If I started doing that, that, my friends, is a conflict of interest. Can you see the difference there? So if it's separate, it's fine. But if I start using my influence to further the interests of a private company just because I like them a lot because they put money in my bank account, I'm not being the best MP, to say the least. And again, I'm not saying that was the mindset that Owen Paterson had. He completely denies any wrongdoing at all. But his critics would say, yeah, that mindset rings a bell. So anyway, what happened with Owen Paterson was that essentially he was flagged by this independent commissioner who investigated his conduct, and they accused him of breaking the rules. And specifically, he was found to have used his position on 16 occasions to have meetings about these two outside businesses. And then on top of that, he was found to have sent two letters with the interests of these companies, right? So the contents of the letters were talking about their interests, but they were written on House of Commons headed paper. Nothing screams conflict of interest more than House of Commons headed paper with contents that are all about the interests of a specific business. So he was found to be guilty of breaking the rules, but not just that. The report itself that was kind of produced by this independent commissioner and this committee, it was very damning in tone. Okay, let me read a quote from it here. No previous case of paid advocacy has seen so many breaches or such a clear pattern of confusion between the private and the public interest. No MP wants that said about them. Let me tell you, you know, this is literally branding him a corruptible politician. It's saying you keep conflating your private money interests and then your public MP electable interests, and that's not okay. Now, the way that the Parliament currently works, I've touched on it, but I'll be super clear on it, is if the independent commissioner finds you guilty of breaking this sort of code of conduct when it comes to lobbying, when it comes to pushing interests, then this committee, the standards committee, which is made up of MPs, basically get to decide what happens to you. And in the case of the committee with Owen Paterson, they decided that Paterson should be suspended for 30 days from Parliament, from his role as an MP. And that, I mean, it might sound quite soft if anyone's listening who's been like suspended from school. You might be thinking, well, that's not too bad. You know, you got to go home and then you got to join everyone again and it's fine. But if you're an MP, it's not the best. Like, being suspended from your job is not a good look. But also, it's not just the optics that are kind of a shame for him. It's also the fact that in 30 days, while he's suspended, a recall petition could get put together, which is basically where people sign a thing saying we want a by-election, we want to get rid of this guy, and we want to get him to vacate the seat so that we can have an election to fill that seat with somebody else. So the idea that he got suspended leaves him vulnerable to being kicked out the seat altogether. Have a listen to Chris Bryant. This is the head of the Parliamentary Standards Committee, so the head of this group of MPs that kind of essentially made this decision. He happens to be a Labour MP, and this is him standing up in the Commons justifying that decision to suspend Paterson for 30 days.
As we say in the report, each of Mr. Patterson's several instances of paid advocacy would merit a suspension of several days. But the fact that he has repeatedly failed to perceive his conflict of interest and used his privileged position as a Member of Parliament to secure benefits for two companies for whom he was a paid consultant is even more concerning. He has brought the House into disrepute. A Conservative colleague, whom I respect a great deal, said to me on Monday that justice should always be tempered by mercy. I agree. But justice also demands no special favours. These are the precedents that we considered.
So that was Chris Bryant standing up in the House of Commons talking about that committee report on Owen Paterson's conduct. But here's the thing, right? Usually you'd expect that the Parliamentary Standards Committee is kind of a democratic process because it's a cross-section of MPs from different parties. They all have to kind of try to agree on a bit of an outcome. And then when they've agreed on it, the rest of Parliament are meant to kind of accept it. It's just like why that exists. Otherwise, why would it exist at all? Okay. But in this instance, Owen Paterson just didn't accept the verdict. Like, he just didn't accept it. He said the whole thing's unfair. He said the way that the investigation was done was unfair. But on top of that, he kind of insists that he's not actually done anything wrong in the first place. So this has just all been blown way out of proportion.
Sadly, after 2 years, the report that has come through the current system is a travesty. I wasn't spoken to for 17 months. And 17 is the magic figure. I have 17 witnesses, all of whom testify to my narrative being correct. The Commission and the Committee have no witnesses, but not one of my witnesses was ever contacted, let alone talked to. I would do what I did tomorrow. There was no pecuniary gain to the companies I was involved in or to me at all. What I did, I brought to the attention of the government carcinogenic products in milk. Hang on, a carcinogenic ham and the life-threatening dangers not calibrated. Just wait, very important. Those are three exceptions. There is an exception rule of a serious harm.
Okay, that was Owen Paterson's voice there saying, you know, I would do what I did again. And you heard him at the end, quite interestingly, say, yes, I was lobbying for the interests of these private companies, but what I was trying to get the attention of ministers about was actually about safety, about food safety. So had I gotten their attention and had I made changes, it would have been for everybody's benefit. And yes, if these two companies would have benefited, fine, that might have happened. But I'm also doing it for the greater good. So surely that makes this an exception. Safe to say, though, the committee who kind of put the report together didn't really buy that argument. Now, just to say, this segment of the podcast might be quite tough to listen to because we're going to talk about Owen Paterson's family here. But obviously in that clip just there that you heard him say that it's been a 2-year saga that this investigation had been underway. And that was because it's a long process, and it's a long and kind of brutal process where they're looking into your documents and into your emails and they're doing various interviews and whatever. And, you know, if you're the MP that's being investigated, you're going through the motions. You can't really talk about it because it's kind of confidential. And you're thinking, there's every chance that I'm going to come out of this with my reputation in tatters. So I don't envy anyone in that position. You know, it would be stressful. But that being said, many would argue that it doesn't matter if it's gruesome. It's absolutely necessary because it's what holds our democracy in place. If MPs could just promote the interests of the people that pay them on the side and be safe in the knowledge that no one's going to bother looking into this, then would it be tempting to veer on the side of, you know, promoting your own interests and promoting the interests of those who pay you lots of money? I think it would. I think that's fair to say. But, you know, nonetheless, right, we're talking about the stress of this investigation process. And Paterson claims that this whole 2-year thing had an absolutely unimaginable bearing on his personal life. And that is in relation to the fact that his wife took her own life in June 2020. I'll read you a section from his response to the investigation that kind of deemed him guilty of breaking the rules. It was a 1,600 word response. And I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just read this bit. So this is a quote. Rose would ask me despairingly every weekend about the progress of the inquiry. The longer the investigation went on and the more the questions went further and further from the original accusations, the more her anxiety increased. She felt beleaguered as I was bound by confidentiality and I could not discuss this inquiry with anyone else. She became convinced that the investigation would destroy my reputation and force me to resign my North Shropshire seat that I have now served for 24 years. So that's a segment of Patterson's response. I think regardless of where you sit on this issue, it's really horrific to read that. And obviously this component of the story has fed into this belief held by lots of Patterson's allies and friends that this system is wrong. Like how the parliamentary standards are policed, it's not working and it needs an overhaul. Okay, so this has been part of what's fed into this idea that we should change this system. And of course, now we're talking about the phase of the story where the government proposed to amend the very nature of how the parliament standards are upheld. So, you know, the way that the independent commissioner works and the way that this committee works, all of it, we should just do our own system.
We must address the grave concerns about the way in which we are held to account under our own standing orders. My amendment on the order paper today is not about whether the Committee on Standards third report findings are correct or incorrect. It is not about whether Mr. Owen Paterson is innocent or guilty under that report. It's not about letting anyone off, stitching anything up, or any of the other accusations flying around the chamber. Today's amendment is about the process of investigations into members and the question of whether this process must now be reviewed by a politically balanced select committee that will consider some exceedingly serious questions.
Andrea Leadsom there, who is leading the charge on changing this whole process. In fact, the amendment that she was proposing is called the Leadsom Amendment. I don't think everybody loved it. Understatement of the century. You know, the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats were going, what the fuck? You definitely can't do this. This is like you guys marking your own homework. If you just decide that you don't like how the committee's working, even though it's a cross-section of lots of different MPs from different parties, if you just decide that's not good enough and then shoehorn in your own version of it, then you're just literally writing your own rules. You're moving the goalposts, however many metaphors you want. You're just making the rules up as you go along that suit you. So that's how the kind of critics saw it, and they saw it as incredibly unfair. On Owen Paterson's side and on his allies' side, they were saying, you know, he had a really unfair investigation. It took an incredible, horrific toll on his family. He didn't do anything wrong in the first place because he was trying to alert authorities to a health standards issue. And, you know, we all wanted to put forward evidence. We all wanted to speak on his behalf. And the independent commissioner wouldn't listen to us. So we want a new system. We don't like this one. So these are the two kind of sides of the argument. I think that if I'm honest, I think the Conservatives, yeah, they were absolutely within their rights to have a problem with the way that the Parliamentary Standards Committee works. I think you should always be challenging and questioning how things work. But suddenly deciding in exactly the same week as it happens to have disrupted someone in your party's career, it was all just slightly too convenient, wasn't it? And I just think that didn't make them look the most honest. That's just my viewpoint, but maybe you'll disagree. And so with this new amendment of this, you know, this is the new system, it's going to how it's going to work with a new committee. With that in mind, Boris Johnson's government whipped lots of support up amongst their Conservative MPs. And essentially, they said, look, you guys are going to have to vote in favour of this new committee. We're going to put it forward to a vote. We need a majority to get it passed. And that's kind of the position that these Conservative MPs were put in. You know, you've got your party whip saying you better vote in line with us if you want, you know, if you want a career in the Conservative Party and you want to be well regarded in the Conservative Party. But then you've also got the public pulling on their other side saying, well, are you guys literally just going to change the rules whenever it suits you? Is that how it works now? Is that who our representatives are? So that's the position that lots of these Conservative MPs were put in. Don't get me wrong, a lot of them were more than happy to vote in favour of this amendment because a lot of them really backed Owen Paterson. But I think there were a fair few that thought, this is really uncomfortable. And actually, quite a few Conservatives abstained from the vote altogether. They clearly just did not want to be a part of it. And 13 Conservatives voted against. 13. Which, my God, is quite a bold move to go against your own party on such a kind of controversial and divisive vote, right? And especially when you've got the party whip saying, you better do this, to then turn around and not do it. Like, oh, it takes, yeah, that takes some bottle. But even with that in mind, even with 13 Conservatives voting against it and quite a few abstaining, the vote still went through because of the massive majority that Boris Johnson has. Remember, the Conservative Party have a huge majority in the House of Parliament. They've got loads of seats. They were still able to get this vote through with a majority of 18 votes.
The ayes to the right, 250. The noes to the left, 232.
Shame.
So that was the result of the vote being announced. And I think it was at that point that a lot of people, to be honest, including myself, but, you know, a lot of people in the likes of the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats and the SNP were just like, wow, you guys really, you'll stop at nothing. You know, you'll move the goalposts whenever it suits you. It's one rule for you and it's another rule for the rest of us. And when the rules don't suit you, you change those too. And so with that in mind, the Labour Party and the SNP and pretty much all the opposition parties went, fuck your new committee. Fuck it. We're not going to. Do you know what? If you want a new system, we're not taking part. So your new standards committee is going to have to be entirely made up of Conservative MPs. And how that would be fair or democratic in any world is beyond us. So good luck to you. That was completely the, honestly, that's completely the attitude. It was like a boycott. Like, we're just not taking part because we completely disapprove of the way that you've done this. And that essentially made the new committee completely moot. You can't. There's nothing left that the government could have done. And it really, it was like the ultimate checkmate, you know. Yes, you've pushed this vote through. Yes, you've said that the rules don't suit you and you've changed them. But if you cannot convince us to take part, then this so-called new standards committee looks like a farce. So what's the point? And that really put the government in a position. And so within 24 hours, they had to go, oh, forget it.
But I, of course, listened to the debate yesterday very carefully and the comments that were made from across the House. And I absolutely recognise that it is important to proceed on a cross-party basis to have the highest standards within this House, but ones that, when they are implemented, are fair to those to whom they are implemented upon. And that is what we will seek to achieve.
That was Jacob Rees-Mogg speaking in the House of Commons on behalf of the Prime Minister. And even though no one is quite as verbose and wordy as Jacob Rees-Mogg, hopefully amongst that you could make out the fact that he was saying, let's just forget this new committee because it's clearly not going to work if you guys in the other parties will not join in. So, in other words, let's just scrap it for now. And do you know what? I make out like it was all just because the other parties boycotted the idea, but I don't think it was just that that made the government kind of panic and scrap the idea. I also think it was about the public's disapproval. I think there was an element there to begin with where Boris Johnson and the government thought, you know what, the public aren't really going to notice this. It's a story about an MP breaking the rules, but we're all squabbling with each other about the parliamentary standards, you know. It's just very bureaucratic. It's very dry. It's all about the rules that we have to live by. And your average, you know, Susan in Slough, who works as a hairdresser, is not going to care. This is not something that's going to enter her radar. But they were wrong. Because yes, this is dry, and yes, it's bureaucratic, and yes, it's about all the bloody rules in Parliament that everyone has to follow. But you know what else it's about? It's about trust, and it's about corruption. And that does get the attention of Susan in Slough and everyone else. And I think there was a naivety here, if I'm honest. I think the government were maybe thinking, the papers aren't going to pick up on this in a massive way. Oh boy, did they. You know, the further this spiraled, especially when the other parties just boycotted the new committee and all that stuff, it just completely took over the front pages. So I've got some of them here in my notes. The sleazy way out, said the Metro on the 4th of November. And then here, the Daily Mail, this one's brutal. Shameless MPs sink back into sleaze. So that was the Daily Mail from the 4th of November. Tories rip up Britain's anti-sleaze rules to save guilty MP, was the front of the eye. So these are not fun headlines for a Prime Minister to see. Now, you don't want the word sleaze to be the word of the day when you're in charge. And so, yeah, after all that turmoil and all that controversy and trying to force all these Conservative MPs to vote in favour of this thing that some of them will have been quite uncomfortable with, it's now been swiped off the table and we're back to how it was before. So what a position to put them in for literally no reason. And like I say, there were Conservative MPs who were perfectly happy to vote in favour of this new amendment, but there were some who I imagine were a bit cut up about it, a bit torn. Also, you know, the public are going to be looking at them and saying, why did you vote for this? When the government turned their back on it in 24 hours, it clearly wasn't a very good idea because the government sacked it off. So why did you vote for it? And does that mean that you're any good at your job? For example, Peter Bone, the Conservative MP for Wellingborough, it's not just angry emails he's been getting. He voted in favour of the amendment. So he voted in favour to try and protect Owen Paterson. And he recently went on Nigel Farage's show on GB News and shared what happened to his office.
Peter, I understand there's been a bit of public backlash in Wellingborough already against you.
Well, yes, and my office was vandalised this morning. Some thug wrote Tory sleaze all over it, painted it, intimidating my staff. Completely unacceptable.
But the interesting thing is they wrote Tory sleaze on your office. So this actually did resonate, didn't it? This whole case, what happened yesterday in the House of Commons, and clearly Owen Paterson's arguments that he put, that it was all to do with food safety, yeah, etc., which I did listen to very carefully on Sunday, but we also discovered that with that company, Randox, he also went to government sources proposing perhaps new types of blood tests, etc. I mean, it doesn't look pretty, does it?
No, well, the Standards Committee rejected what Owen said and published a report. And what should have happened in the Commons, we should have dealt with that report and voted on it, either to accept it or reject it or change the sentence or whatever. We should have done that separately. What we shouldn't have tried to do was change the rules after, retrospectively. And that was, the government made a huge mistake. Yes, the system is flawed. Across the House, people agree it's flawed. Even, yeah, the chairman of the Standards Committee said there's room for improvement. But conflating the two things together was stupid.
Peter Bone there, the MP for Wellingborough, talking about how his office had been vandalised with the words Tory sleaze written across the windows at the time of the vote. And it was interesting, I thought, to hear him be so candid and to say, we really should not have tried to do that thing where we changed the rules. He called it stupid. That was the word he used. So it was interesting to have a politician say, yeah, I voted for this thing and I did it because my party told me to, and my party was stupid for wanting to do that. I wish we hadn't done that. You know, it was interesting to hear that. Actually, do you know who's worth mentioning that you might not have heard about? And they came out great in this whole scenario, was Angela Richardson, right? So she's a Conservative MP. She's an MP for Guildford. Guildford? Yep, Guildford. And she abstained from the vote. But she isn't any ordinary backbencher. She is a ministerial aide. So technically she works as an MP, yes, but as part of the government as well, as a governmental figure. And that means, since she went against the party whip, i.e. she went against the direction that the Conservative Party all agreed on, she got fired from her role in government because it was essentially her saying, I don't back the things that my government are doing, and you're all meant to sort of stick together when you work within the government. So the fact that she abstained got her fired, right? And she even went on Twitter and said, this is a quote from her, I abstained on the hashtag Leadsom amendment today, and I was aware that my job was at risk, but it was a matter of principle for me. And now she's just had the best 24 hours. Now that the government have U-turned on the whole thing, they've given her a job back, right? So she lost her job, but she kind of looked like this very principled politician. And now that she's got her job back, she has just like, well, she looks great, doesn't she? She kept her job. She kept her integrity. Lovely bit of extra PR for her as well, because I'm not going to lie, I hadn't really heard of her before this, but now I kind of think of her as this person who sticks to her values, right? And all these other Tories who have kind of been strong-handed into voting for something that some of them would have thought was a bit crap, now they look a bit silly, don't they? And again, I've said it so many times, but lots of them were happy to vote for it. But, you know, like Peter Bone, who went on GB News, was saying the whole thing was stupid and I voted for it. So he just doesn't look like he has you know, baskets of integrity, I wouldn't say. So it's been a very interesting shake-up, this whole sort of standards amendment thing. And it's definitely made me look more closely at, you know, why do you guys vote the way you do? And how often do you actually back the things that you're voting for? And how often is it just about trying to keep your party happy? So there you have it. A very long and convoluted story that I, to be honest, didn't particularly enjoy researching and putting together. I found this really, really hard work. And I usually love the kind of convoluted political stuff, but this one just really, I don't know. I didn't love researching it. And I felt like the material online wasn't as helpful as usual. So hopefully this podcast has helped you and you've got your ducks in a row, your dead ducks. if you listen to the last podcast, you'll know what I'm talking about. If not, I'll sound mental. But Paterson, as you'll know, has now resigned as a result of this U-turn, because of course initially he was over the moon because he thought, oh, great, you know, the Conservatives have pushed through this change, it means I'm off the hook because I don't have to abide by the suspension that was rolled out by the committee. But then when the government changed their mind, it put him back to square one and he realized, do you know what, this whole thing has just gone too far, I should just step down. So his statement went as follows: I have today, after consultation with my family and with much sadness, decided to resign as the MP for North Shropshire. The last 2 years have been an indescribable nightmare for my family and me. My integrity, which I hold very dear, has been repeatedly and publicly questioned. I maintain that I am totally innocent of what I have been accused of, and I acted at all times in the interests of public health and safety. I, my family, and those closest to me know the same. I am unable to clear my name under the current system. I will remain a public servant, but outside the cruel world of politics. So that was a segment of his sort of exiting statement when he announced his resignation. And I'll leave it up to you as to what you make of all of this. I think one thing I'll say, you know, I can't possibly know what Owen Paterson's intentions were. I never will. But what I will say is that it was all very convenient that the government wanted to suddenly change the rules. That's what I'll say. I'm struggling to imagine a world where a Labour MP got caught doing what Owen Paterson did, and Boris Johnson's Conservative government immediately want to protect them and overhaul the system in order to stop them from being suspended. I can't personally imagine that. So I think that did all feel a bit rule-breaky and a bit, you know, one rule for us and another rule for you. But I would still encourage, when looking at this story, a nuanced and yet humane commentary of the whole thing, just bearing in mind, obviously, some of the tragedies that are surrounding it. What we can expect is a by-election in Owen Paterson's seat of North Shropshire, a pretty safe Tory seat, you know, since he, like I said at the beginning, he hasn't moved since 1997. So the constituents in North Shropshire obviously have a pattern of voting, or they've been very satisfied with him as an MP this far. But will this whole scandal give other parties a bit of a window? You know, maybe the people in North Shropshire are thinking, maybe we should vote somebody else. So I think Labour and the Liberal Democrats and these other guys will be going, right, let's gun really hard for this. So I think watching that by-election should be very interesting. But let me know what you think. I hope this was helpful. For the love of God, I hope it was, because it was bleak to put together. And thank you for listening. Thank you for those lovely reviews. Keep them coming, please. On Apple Podcasts, even if you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a review. So do that. And give it 5 stars, and that helps other people find me. Do follow me on Instagram and Twitter at juliabell_x. You can keep up with what I get up to. I'm quite often on BBC Radio 5 Live, and I'll be doing other quite exciting projects in the near future, which I'll keep you posted about. And if you want to keep this podcast going, the only way to do it, I say it every time, is please become a patron. Please become a patron. It's the only way to keep me going. It's the equivalent of about a cup of coffee a month. And there's lots of bonus content on there for you to enjoy, which I will keep up with as well. I'll put the link for the Patreon page in the episode description. And I don't know about you, but I have managed to maintain my strength in not turning the heating on yet this year. I don't know how much longer I can go. My hands are so cold right now. So I might, as a little treat, as a little fireworks night treat, put the heating on. Who said this podcast wasn't a barrel of laughs? Okay, I'll leave you to it. Thank you for listening. Love you lots. Goodbye.